Welcome home. We are WNSG, AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are in Ocean City, Maryland. We're at Mako. We're having some fun down here. It is still early in the morning. Some of my guests, I was a little concerned about booking them early in the morning, including myself. I just want to say for the record that I have been out some late nights with the former mayor of Hagerstown, who's now the opioid czar, doing the networking thing here. I went to bed early last night.
Did you?
I am old and tired, and my buddy's band, Bad With Names, is playing at Fager's tonight. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go twice as hard, and I'm not. But I'm going to be here twice as early. How are you?
I had a new experience last night, actually. So I left. I was out networking, and my daughter, who was 17, had my car. She was out at the teen club in Ocean City, which is still a thing, like the same one I went to.
Down on the boardwalk?
H2O. Yes.
Well, you're a little younger than me, but we had them in the 80s.
Yes. So she was there, and she came and picked me up and then drove me to the beach.
Oh, hold on.
New
Your daughter
experience.
Picked you up she from did. A teen club.
Yes. Well, she went to the teen club and then came and picked me up. So it was.
You live long enough, they're going to take care of you.
You know, I was just walking down the road, and she was like, I see you. I'll come get you.
So you bring your kid to the beach?
I do.
How's that going?
It's great. She's awesome. Her and her friend are down here. They are living their best life while I work. And so it's great.
Yeah, mom's here doing the set. Emily Keller is the former mayor of Hagerstown, but once a mayor.
Always a mayor.
Always a mayor.
Yes.
Now, the special
secretary.
I knew you were special. Special secretary of overdose response for the Maryland's Office of Overdose Response.
Yes. It's long. It costs more. Maryland's Office of Overdose Response. Not intentional for Governor Moore, but Moore for short.
Step up a little bit here so we can get on the set and look good here. I'm going to grab my lottery tickets in a minute, too.
All right.
We're sort of old pals at this point. You take this gig. And I love your little hometown, and I'm still trying to get a Crumpy's donut, although I did offer you death by coconut. Turns out you're not a coconut person. Ugly pie, day 20, check it out. This role of yours that Wes Moore created, run me through the genesis of, I'm the mayor of Hagerstown, and you sort of famously were whisked away by Joe Biden at one point. I know we talked about that when he was running the country. And Wes took over 2.5 years ago. You're the sitting mayor of Hagerstown at that time, Democratic mayor. First off, give your story about your best friend, and just for everybody that doesn't reset. I feel like I know you better. I don't want to bring everybody in on the story. But this last 2.5 years has been a whirlwind for you.
It has been. It has been. Back in 2016, my best friend Ashley, she was really struggling with what was then heroin. And
you're an insurance agent, right?
I was.
That's what your real life is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for a couple years prior to that, I've been watching her really struggle. And I felt like I was watching her system just fail her over and over again. Like, she needed help. And she was being treated like a criminal. And I got frustrated. And I was watching my county thinking, here's like my entire generation using drugs. And there's nowhere to go. There's not a lot of help. I felt like not enough people were speaking out about this, that we were wanting to pretend that it wasn't happening in Western Maryland. And it was. Like,
half the country pretending Donald Trump's doing the right thing.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, putting our head in the sand or wishing it away or thoughts and prayers.
Doesn't work. And you know, drug use knows no boundaries. It doesn't matter where you come from, what part of the state you're in, what part of the country. And so I thought, you know, I'm sitting on the sidelines complaining. So I can try to do something about it, or I can just sit here and complain. So I decided I was going to run for office. And if you would have told me even that year that I was going to run for office, I would have told you were out of your mind.
What did running for office mean?
I was running for Hagerstown City Council.
City Council. Okay.
Yes. Because I felt like if I got into an elected position, I could yell loud enough and try to effect change.
That's exactly why I was going to run for the mayor of Baltimore.
Yes.
That's how Baltimore Positive was born.
Yes.
I saw the city on fire. I saw the mayor going to jail. I saw this creep running the country. And I thought, I got to get louder about something other than the Orioles and the Ravens.
Yes.
I just need to get loud.
That was me.
Literally.
And I made Ashley a promise. I said, I'm going to be loud for you. I'm going to give a voice to the voiceless. And I ran. And unfortunately, in the middle of my first campaign, she lost her life to an overdose. And it was obviously the worst day of my life. She was my first friend, the first day of kindergarten. And I just kept reminding myself, I told her I was doing this for her and for people who like her felt like she didn't have a voice. So I just told her story, my story, this story over and over again. So while I was campaigning, people would be, what are you going to do about the tax rate? What are you going to do about the what? And I would say, I have no idea, but I promise you I will do the work and figure that out. But what I do know is if we don't get the substance use crisis under control in this country, we're not going to have people to pay taxes. The water system is not going to matter.
The drugs are stronger than the people.
Yes. And we're hurting. Our people are hurting.
Addiction is strong.
It's so
strong.
Both of
my parents were at it. I mean, my mother was an awful alcoholic. You know, my real mother.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why I was adopted, right?
Yes.
I mean, you know, thank God for my adopted parents.
Thank God.
Like, I'm from Dundalk. I mean, I saw all of this happen. You know, I'm from East Baltimore, no different than Hagerstown, you know.
Yes.
And we've seen this, and I often wondered who's doing anything about this. Now I see the Narcan. I mean, I see ads, I hear ads. I'm not running in on Baltimore Positive, but maybe we could. But but I do see that it's being addressed.
Yes.
And it's in the news.
And then, it's getting better.
And then someone like you comes along, you run for mayor, you somehow you win, and then you're whisked away by the president of the United States, and then the governor gets on to you. When did you meet Wes Moore? When's like a campaign trail? You were already the mayor of Hagerstown long before he was a candidate.
I was.
I knew both of you.
I met him very early in his campaign. I think at that time he was polling at like 1%, right? But I met him down here in Ocean City during the Maryland Municipal League Conference. And I sat down, and it happened to be the day that Ashley had died, the anniversary of her death, 5 years later. So I was already, like, emotional, you know, whatever. And I sat down with him, and I shared my story with
him. And he wasn't the governor then.
No.
No, he was just a candidate.
He was
Robin Hood.
He was a long shot candidate.
Oh, I know. I remind him of that every time I had him on, that I brought him on the air.
Yes.
Polling less than 2%. I haven't seen
him
since then, but yeah.
He was. And you know, what's crazy is I got up from that conversation and I remember calling, I think my parents or someone at the time, and I said, I just met our next governor. I knew. Like, there was no doubt after you spoke to Wes Moore, the person, and you saw, like, his passion and ideas. To me, I was like, that's our next governor. I don't care if he's polling at 1%. And I believed him. And he would come to Hagerstown, we would do tours, and the whole time I would say, substance use, substance use, substance use. You know, I'd show him Hagerstown, tell him all the really great projects.
Well, that's the reason
we had
you
going.
Ran. Yeah.
And I just said, like, a lot is being done. Maryland's doing a lot of good things, but we can do a lot more. And to my surprise, once he won the election, they called and he said, you know, if you are interested in taking this position, I want to make it
but
a cabinet-level
position. But there
wasn't
a position, right? Like, literally, it was created.
Yeah.
You sort of inspired the creation of it, I would think. If I had Wes on, whether he's BSing me or not, it probably, that back of his mind, this was something that needed to be added that wasn't there at that time, right?
Yeah.
You met with Hogan a million times. You were the mayor of Hagerstown, right?
Like, I did.
Yeah.
Yes. And he had a director-level position, but there was no cabinet-level position that was specific for substance use. Of course, the Secretary of Health oversees, but that's such a huge job. You know, so substance use is a major, important part of it, but the Secretary of Health has a portfolio of all the health issues.
Sure.
So this is just specific for substance use and what can we do. So I'm honored to be here. It's really, like, crazy to think about, because 10 years ago I would have never imagined this, but I feel like people got it resonated, because I'm just human, you know. I'm just human. I just want to save people's lives. I just want to help. That's it. I come to work every day and feel very fulfilled, because I see the really terrible things, I see people who are struggling, but I also get to see the fact that people recover. Every single day someone will come up to me and say, I have 10 years, I have 10 days, I have, you know, 10 months.
I turned it around.
And it's really cool. We focus so much on the death and on the terrible things that happen with substance use disorder. But I get to see the other side of it, too. And I think we're getting there as a country. We're starting to see people are getting better and recovering. And it's really a beautiful thing.
Well, the fentanyl thing is also just a huge part of this, right?
Yes.
And that is at the heart of it. Emily Keller's here, former mayor of Hagerstown, but always the mayor of Crumpies in Hagerstown. Now doing, you know, I call you sort of the drug czar, the opioid czar. With your friend and what you learned as an insurance agent, as a grieving friend, becoming the mayor, trying to make a difference. What does make a difference mean to you 10 years ago? And what does it mean over the last 2 years to intervene? How can government intervene? What could you have done to save your friend in the seat you're in now that wasn't done for her 10 years ago?
I think making treatment readily available is important, and we're there now.
And not like criminalizing it to start with that, right?
Yes. People who use drugs aren't bad people. We all have a drug of choice, whether it be caffeine, whether it be sugar, whether it be cigarettes. Like, we only look at drug addiction. We look at it so different. Just like people who go to get on methadone or, you know, other medications for opioid use disorder, we pause a little bit. There's still the stigma. If you have a heart disease, you go get put on medication for it. Like, we treat the disease of addiction different than any other addiction. So I think, one, humanizing it and getting rid of that stigma, getting rid of, you know, someone, it's okay to say I need help. It's okay to say I'm not okay. So
let's not judge it. Let's treat it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. You're not a terrible person because you made bad decisions. Like, we all make bad decisions. We're all one bad decision away from the rest of our life.
I didn't make any last
Me neither. But, you know, and having treatment readily available and harm reduction efforts, really, you know, understanding that people
harm
are going to
harm reduction, you mean self-harm in that way. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Helping someone be as safe as possible. So naloxone, having naloxone everywhere is a harm reduction effort because naloxone saves people lives. Syringe service programs, providing, you know, sterile syringes and drug using equipment to people who are using drugs, that helps keep them as healthy as possible because that person may not be ready right then to get treatment, but when they are, let's make sure they're the healthiest version of themselves when they go to get treatment. So a lot of underlying diseases like hepatitis C, like HIV, those issues aren't there.
See, the Republican in me would come out and say, we're giving them syringes instead of giving them treatment. Explain that to the pessimist in me.
Absolutely. I love this argument, right? We can give all the money in the world. People have been using drugs forever and ever, right? They have been. So
I've been talking about that like as my lottery. I'm a lottery spokesperson. Mm-hmm. We were here talking about all the money. People say, lottery, gambling, bad. Yeah, cannabis, bad. And I'm like, people are using it. Louis the bookmaker was getting this money.
They've been doing it forever.
And now the state's getting it, right? Right. So, I mean, people are using drugs.
Yes.
And instead of putting them in jail, let's clean them up.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And I think, you know, hepatitis happens to people who don't use drugs. HIV happens. So when people who use drugs have other underlying issues, that's a public health issue. So providing a clean syringe to someone so they're not spreading diseases affects people who don't use drugs as well. And I think if we started looking at it like that, like this is truly a public health perspective. And if you can help someone be the best version of themselves, again, a clean syringe can stop the spread of X, Y, and Z. So when that person says, you know what, I'm ready for treatment, let's go. Now you're treating a person with a substance use disorder. You're not treating a person with a substance use disorder and multiple other underlying diseases. It's good for everyone. It's good for everyone. And let's just take away like any of the stigma, any of the drug use, any of the, aren't we just supposed to take care of each other? Right? Like at the end of the day, aren't we just supposed to take care of each other? And if providing a clean syringe is helping that person be a little bit more healthy, are we really going to argue that?
Give me your day 3 weeks ago when the North Avenue national story came out about the deaths. You know, I was following a little bit on my phone. I'll be honest with you. I did not read a lot about it, go further into it, and I knew I'd be here in a couple weeks. And I thought of you. I thought, like, Emily's phone rang, and she's on North Avenue right now, and there are a lot of dead people, and it's drugs, and this isn't a good PR thing, but maybe out of, because certainly for Baltimore, everybody's in drugs. I know how this goes with Fox 25. But give me what that was about. Just tell me the story and how you're working to make sure that doesn't. That's a bad day for Baltimore. It's a bad day for Maryland. It's a bad day for all these people and their families, whatever their circumstances were that brought them to death by drugs in a drug market in the west of Baltimore. I know everything the mayor's trying to do, everything the governor's trying to do, everything you're trying to do. You can only do so much, but that was a circumstance that in my mind I sort of thought, I know how this happens, but how does this happen?
The good thing, if we want to look at it from a good perspective, actually no one died. It was a mass overdose event, but no one lost their life. And I think that's credit to the incredible work going on in Baltimore City and through the treatment organizations that are right there, because they responded immediately. yes, my phone rang, and yes, I was in Baltimore.
Yeah,
in an
yeah,
hour.
Yeah,
I mean, I was I was in a pair of flip flops because I had just left an event. I had taken my heels off. I was in a pair of flip flops, and I just got in the car and left. So I'm out there doing outreach and flip flops and whatever I was wearing that day, with a bag in naloxone and saying, "What can we do?" Walking with partners and all the community partners. There was an email that went out that said, "We need help in Penn North right now." 53 organizations replied all to that email within an hour. 53. I mean, it was all hands on deck. No one died. A lot of people got
into services. I
didn't realize
that. I thought there was death involved. So I misspoke.
It's because it was called a mass casualty event because so people assume casualty means death.
Death. Right.
It just meant mass casualty as far as like EMS. No one died, thankfully.
I really didn't know that.
But it was a horrific event. You know, obviously there was something in the drug supply that was not normal.
One person having an overdose right there would be something I would not want to witness.
Yes.
Right.
And, and this was like almost 30 were transported to a hospital or treated. But the days that followed, I mean, there were food services there. There were treatment centers. I went out the next day and did outreach with Healthcare for the Homeless, which is a doctor and other peers and specialists.
You think
that
you saved
out
other lives in the following days because
yes
of this? People saw it and they're like, I got to rethink even using it. Well, just the whole thing gets rethought when people are.
Yes. And they see that so many people showed up and cared. And here's naloxone. Here's what do you need in this moment? Do you need a bottle of water?
Not enough people cared about Ashley, right?
Yes.
Yeah, at that time. Okay,
yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
That's progress.
It's big progress. It was really heartwarming to see. In a terrible, terrible situation, the community, Baltimore City rallied and said, we're here, we're going to help. And the follow-through that's happened since then is, you know, meetings, senators are involved, people are involved saying, how can we make this happen every day? Mm-hmm. Because there are really incredible people who pound the pavement, who literally just walk up to people, doctors, who walk up to people and say, what do you need? How can I help you? And so now it's like, how do we keep that going on an everyday basis and make sure that when that person standing on the corner says, today's the day, I don't want to do this anymore, today's the day I'm ready to go seek treatment, that they can go get it. And they know where to go.
Emily Keller's here. She's the former mayor of Hagerstown. She's my friend, even though we've not had a donut together.
One day.
She is the, let me read off your thing here, Special Secretary of Overdose Response from the Maryland's Office of Overdose Response. It is a new role the last couple of years. Just your message to people out there, wherever they are, in regard to the drug, the advertising, the locks, Narcan, all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, why do I need to carry it? You know, I see it and I hear it. And I'm like, that doesn't apply to me.
Yeah.
To some degree.
It does. Though you never know where you're going to witness an overdose. You can be walking down the street. You could be walking into a restaurant. Having naloxone on you, or what people know as the brand name Narcan.
What does it do?
It reverses an overdose. It blocks your opioid receptors. It enables breathing.
It enables breathing.
It enables. Okay, that is the most simple way to put it. It enables
breathing. I'm learning all kinds of stuff today.
So just like you go get trained in CPR because you want to know if
save
someone.
Save a life, sure.
You save a life.
Right.
Having, it's a nasal spray. If you've ever used Afrin or any kind of like allergy nasal spray. No?
Well, my wife is diabetic and she always gives me this golden needle.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, I hope I never have to use it. It's in
that's
the refrigerator.
Scary.
I'm like, what she's telling me. Like if you're on the ground code now, but you know, my wife's sugar, she's passed that several times.
That's scary.
On me. Orange juice down her throat, mm-hmm, sugar tabs, all of that.
Yes.
So as a caregiver, you know, to someone that has that issue, I know that it happens fast.
Yes.
I mean, her sugar can go fast.
It can.
And if I don't know what I'm doing, or she's in a place, she's not with me today, she's in New Hampshire, she's in a weird place at a concert, something happens, people don't even know she's diabetic. They don't look for her wristband or her little trinket that says I'm diabetic. So, yeah, I mean, it's in that moment, right?
Yes.
That you would have, it's a nasal spray.
It's a nasal spray. And we've tried to make it as simple as possible to eliminate that fear, because I get it.
You need me to help you market it, because like, I didn't even know it was a nasal
spray. It is
a nasal
spray.
I literally didn't know that.
It looks just like a little Afrin.
You know what I thought it was? I mean, I'm not trying to make you laugh.
Okay.
I thought it was Pulp Fiction. I thought it was, I literally, because my wife gives me this needle for her.
It used to be intravenous. So
years and years ago. Okay. So Pulp Fiction in 1992 was probably that was what the way it was administered.
Yes. And so people are scared of it, but it's not. It's truly a nasal spray. If you see someone, you think they're overdosing, they're turning blue, they're not breathing, they may be like snoring sound, you can try to wake them up. We say do a sternum rub. It hurts. Try to see if they wake up. If they don't, you spray it in their nose, call 911. And within, normally 2 to 3 minutes, they will be breathing. All you need is that person breathing. As long, they don't have to be up talking to you, having a good time. As long as they're breathing, by the time EMS gets there, they can take over. You probably just save their life.
And that happened in West Baltimore a couple weeks ago. Everyone was...
Naloxone reversed what was happening to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a beautiful thing.
All right. So I want to end all the serious conversation right now with Emily Keller and say, how in the world did you get elected being a Washington Commanders fan? I told her yesterday, I said, you're going to look so beautiful in purple. It's going to go with your eyes. And then she wore Ravens purple today, and she ain't even one of us.
I am a diehard Commander fan. I told you this yesterday. Listen, I was six the last time we won a Super Bowl, and I remember it. So I have watched us lose my entire adult life. If anyone is owed a Super Bowl, it is me. I am diehard Commander fan.
Well, you won a playoff game, Leah. You got a real quarterback.
We won a playoff. It was my Super Bowl. I mean, you couldn't tell me anything
that
week. I cried. I celebrated. I was insufferable. I mean, I wore a Commander's jersey shirt every single day. Everyone
knows. I've never seen a picture of you in a Commander's anything.
I have the leggings. I have the hat.
This will be forever for me to see you in purple like this and think like
I go to Ravens games.
I feel like I've reversed you. I've Narcammed your sports needs and I've moved you to the right side.
In my defense, purple is the color of recovery. So I wear purple a lot.
You know what I honestly thought? That your department got together and Wes is trolling you by putting purple on you. That's kind of what I thought.
No, I'm a good sport.
But Wes can't troll you because the stadium's in his state, too.
I don't root against the Ravens, though. I don't root against the Ravens unless they're playing us. Unless it were like a playoff game. Let's be honest. It's been them for a long time. So I don't root against them. I do go to Ravens games. I just wear Commander gear.
That's dumb. Why do you do that?
Because I'm... Listen, I am a Commander fan.
Don't be
I will
a
fan be a Commander
that comes
fan
to
forever.
Our stadium wearing Commander stuff when the Ravens are playing the Steelers.
If you came to watch a Commander game with me, I would expect you.
Do you hate the Steelers? You're from Hagerstown. Do you hate the Steelers?
Yes.
All right, we can be friends. Emily Keller is here. We already are friends. She's the former mayor of Hagerstown. She's a Commanders fan. The day after you win the Super Bowl, I hope they're not on the radio that day, but I won't.
You will know. You will hear me.
I'll give it a week or two, and then I'll let you come on and be insufferable once. Because I don't say this with any – maybe I say it with pride. I don't have a lot of Commanders fans in my life. I mean, I really don't. I don't really – there's you and there's Scotty P, and he's kind of giving it up. So, you know.
I will fill the gap.
I do know a lot of people that gave it up, that just, like, gave it up.
Look,
I'm in Baltimore. Obviously, a lot of people have given the Orioles up.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see the upper deck being empty.
Yes.
That bad ownership. It never wrecked you. You never just thought, F that guy. He hates women. He hates everything. I'm
in
Hagerstown.
Let's
just become a Raven fan.
I can't do it.
Cornbread couldn't work on you, try to get you to be a Raven fan?
I go to games with them. I love going to games with them. I love Raven Stadium.
Think how much better it would feel if you loved the Ravens.
No. Are
you a Nationals fan?
I'll go to an Orioles game. I love the stadium.
Right. Do you have any other passions beyond Commander? I mean, you got sports teams, that's your thing.
Well, my daughter does roller derby. So
I got to meet your daughter.
She's a world champion. She was on Team USA. We were in Australia 2 weeks ago. Team USA won. She was the only Maryland skater on Team USA, 17 years old, in an open division. So she skates against men. She is,
As so, badass as you are, maybe.
She is incredible.
All right.
So, yeah.
You're
roller
in Australia.
Derby. In Australia.
Where'd you go in Australia?
Brisbane.
I love Brisbane. It's one of my favorite cities in the world.
It was incredible.
Did you go to Steve Irwin's?
Yes.
I wish I would have known you were there. My favorite town is just off to the east of Steve Irwin. It's called Noosa Heads.
Really?
Like Noosa, the yogurt. Mm-hmm. N-O-O-S-A, Noosa Heads. It's just east of the Australia. It's north of Brisbane. Now, you went set. You go to Surfers Paradise, do all that?
Yes. Oh, we did all the things. We got there a couple days early before, business took over.
I wish I would have known, man. Yes. Is there any better place? I mean, I know you think Maryland's better than Brisbane, but I'll go out on a limb and say I liked Australia a lot.
I did, too. It was so clean.
People are nice there.
People were very nice.
People are
nice
there.
It was clean. It was wild to me. Like, every street you walked on, it was just beautiful. I'm like, there's no littering here? This is different. No one smokes cigarettes. Like, it was a very different place.
I miss Australia.
Yeah, I liked it. It was my first time really out of the country, really.
You have a roller derby daughter.
I have a roller derby
daughter.
That's
a thing?
Yes. I'm going to show you videos when we get done. She's tough.
I mean, I've seen the Charm City roller derby thing. That's what it is, right?
Yes.
And it really is competitive. It's not...
Yeah, competitive. Yeah, she was one of the best defensive, skaters in the country.
All right. The things you learn on this program, Emily Keller is the Special Secretary of Overdose Response. And she's cool, and we know this. Crumpy's Donut, sometime soon. She got to go get with the governor, who is her boss. I am Nestor. We are WNSD. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Go Ravens.
Go Commanders.